Now it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us every Monday morning. We rebroadcast Arthur during the week and also on the weekend. And you can hear him anytime you want with all the episodes at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, Italian recipes and Easter. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. Good morning. Yes, well, it is spring.
Yeah.
Unquestionably, the magnolias have bloomed in Brooklyn. So we know it's spring. And forsythia. So you, any minute, they'll pop where you are, too.
Haven't popped yet, but you're right. They do just
come
up.
Yeah, but any minute. Yeah. It just happens like overnight. Yeah. As does life. It's already Easter.
I know.
And Passover come at the same time this year, which is not usual. I'm forgetting the dates. Is it Friday the 19th or Saturday the 19th is Passover? The first Seder is on Friday night. That's the beginning of the eight-day holiday. And then Sunday is Easter. And also, I do believe Orthodox Easter is also on the Sunday after Passover begins, as the Greeks and Russian Orthodox never forget the Last Supper was a Passover Seder. So Easter has to come after Passover, because Christ was still alive on Passover, and presiding over a Seder. So, by the way, a little sidebar here. And whenever I see a depiction of the Last Supper, and in Italy, and in Spain, there are many, by many other artists besides Leonardo da Vinci, they invariably do not have matzah on the table, which always annoys me. There should be unleavened bread on that Last Supper table. Da Vinci has round rolls, so we know that's not unleavened. Anyway, that is, the key food of Passover, the unleavened bread, matzah, because when the whole story of Passover is about the exodus of the Jews from Egypt, where they were enslaved, courtesy of Joseph. Let's go way back. Joseph was the magnet for Jews to come to Egypt, and then they got enslaved. Anyway, that's the whole story that we read at the Passover Seder, and emphasis on the unleavened bread, which is a symbol of our rush to leave Egypt and not have time to let the bread rise. Now, my 5- and 3-year-old great-nieces know about leavening already, believe it or not. And so their mother asked me to explain to them about matzah, and I think they sort of understood. We're going to see. Next week we'll see how much they got about the matzah being unleavened, and because it doesn't take any time to do. I don't believe, by the way, in making matzah at home. It needs to be made professionally, or at least supervised by somebody who knows what they're doing. And these days, I buy something called shmura matzah, which is handmade matzah, often in a primitive oven. And it is supervised because the rule is the flour and the water cannot come in contact with each other for more than 18 seconds, because that's when fermentation begins. So back to Easter and Passover. Last week I talked about this rich dish for Passover. Looking through my files to see what I wanted to talk about in regard to Easter today, is they have richer dishes for Easter than even for Passover. Of course, both holidays center around eggs, because, as I mentioned last week, chickens lay more eggs in the spring, or at least they did when they were grown naturally. So we have a lot of eggs. And the dish that I am dying to make, I'm going to do this this year. I haven't done it maybe in 25 years, is I'm going to make something called Pashka. Have you ever heard of Pashka?
Yeah.
It's the Russian cheesecake, basically. In fact, I would say it's probably the predecessor to New York cheesecake, because New York cheesecake is based on the cheesecakes that were made in Eastern European Jewish households, and as well non-Jewish households, from the dairy that they had. Sort of everybody, the story is everybody kept a cow, so you always had some fresh cheese. But this is recipe I'm going to give out right now is, obviously, you're going to see, an Americanized version of Pashka. And Pashka is traditionally made in a mold, decorated with the letters XB. Please don't ask me what the XB is. I should have looked it up, but I didn't. And I'm not sure what, maybe Jill will know what the letters XB stand for on a Pashka mold, but who has a Pashka mold? So in America, and this was really a trendy item in the 1970s when I first started writing about food, people made it in a flower pot. And the recipe I have calls for an unused 8-cup flower pot, which you line with a double layer of rinsed and squeezed dry cheesecloth. However, I have yet to find an exactly 8-cup flour pot. Most flour pots of this general size are 7-inch flour pots, and you're going to end up with a little extra cheese mixture. But if you make it the modern American way, except for the delightfulness of a pyramid of cheese, you can put this into individual little cups, like ramekins. You can put it in a big bowl and spoon it out. I'll explain when we get to the end of the recipe, which is super easy, by the way. There's no cooking involved here. You start out, the base is 2 pounds of either what Friendship now calls 2% cottage cheese, pot cheese, or farmer cheese, and which is quite a firm cheese. Also, I buy the brand, the supermarket brand, and it's fine. 1.5 cups of sugar. Oh, by the way, you're putting this all into a big bowl. You could put it into the bowl of a mixer, of a standing mixer. So 2 pounds of cheese, 1.5 cups of sugar, and then a whole package, 8 ounces of cream cheese. Let it come to room temperature for easy mixing. 6 hard-cooked egg yolks, just the yolks. You want to eat the whites, you can make a little egg salad with the whites, I guess, or whatever. 6 large hard-cooked egg yolks. Now, you know how I do my eggs. I've mentioned this a million times, but I'll mention it 1,000,001. It's a fail-proof method. You put your eggs in a pan that just holds them, so if it's 6 eggs, it's not going to be a very big pan. You cover them with cold water. Cover them, well with cold water. Bring that to a boil. As soon as it comes to a big boil, take it off the heat, cover the pan, and let it sit 12 minutes. You will have eggs with perfectly cooked yolks and no gray or green line around them. So 6 of those egg yolks, and you're still putting everything in the same big bowl. And you can do this, by the way, in a food processor if you like, but then you're going to have to do it in 2 batches. To this mixture of cottage cheese, sugar, or farmer's cheese, sugar, cream cheese, 6 egg yolks, which, by the way, have like an emulsifying, besides good flavor, an emulsifying quality here. They will get everything all mixed well. You're going to pour into that 1.5 cups of heavy cream, rich dish. It's a cake. And then I stir into that 3/4 cup of finely ground almonds, and I grind my almonds in a little rotary grater. I used to have one made by Mooley. These days I use one made by some company for Martha Stewart. I'm not sure they sell those anymore. But look, if you don't have one, look for one that has a sealed cylinder. So the nuts, the larger pieces of nuts don't leak out, so to speak, as you grind. So 3/4 cup of ground almonds, it's quite a bit. Blanched almonds, by the way. The grated zest of at least 1/2 lemon. We want a little lemon zest oomph here. A teaspoon of, and I hate wasting a lemon, so grated zest of 1 lemon. Forget 1/2 lemon. And then I like lemon juice. My original recipe calls for lemon extract, but I don't want anybody to go out and buy such a product when you can use 2 tablespoons, basically the juice of a lemon, along with zest. And then vanilla. Now, I use only vanilla extract, but if you were a purist, you would use vanilla bean. But I think a teaspoon of vanilla extract is all you need. And then you have to have raisins. So I have trouble finding, for some reason, golden raisins, but 1/2 cup of golden raisins. So I just use whatever raisins I have without seeds. I sometimes have raisins with seeds. I wouldn't put that in here, unless you don't mind crunching the seeds as you eat it. And that's it. Mix it all together. It's cheese, cream cheese, I mean cottage cheese or farmer cheese, sugar, cream cheese, the egg yolks, and you mix that all up together. Then you pour in slowly and beat in the cream, and then stir in the almonds, the various flavorings, and the lemons. And you pack that into whatever you're going to pack it into. And as I said, it overfills an 8-cup flower pot. So it would look very nice just in a souffle dish, I suppose. And you could decorate it with candied fruit, or maybe some chopped almonds, which are in it already, or in some raisins and the things that are in it. But, you know, this is too rich to eat just as is. And traditionally, Pascha is eaten on a cake called kulich. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Spell it.
And kulich is a yeast cake, basically. And it's a very plain yeast cake because you're going to slice it and spread this Pascha on the kulich. It's, you know, it should be plain. However, kulich is basically babka, but without the rich filling. So, I don't know. These days I see babka everywhere. Well, I live in Brooklyn. But even, you know, I'm talking about in supermarkets that cater to everyone. They still sell babka. But it's hard to find the very plain one. Babka has become very Americanized. So even the traditional cinnamon babka, it has way more cinnamon than anybody dreams could be in a babka. So I would that wouldn't be bad, though, with this. The chocolate babka, I don't know.
Ugh.
I don't think I want to put this on chocolate babka, which is very common these days. You know what it's delicious on? Brioche. And I don't know about you guys, but I find that you can get very good brioche in the supermarket these days. They have brioche hamburger buns and brioche sliced.
They do.
They do, yeah. So this is delicious.
No, they do.
Especially
toasted
brioche smeared with pascha. Mmm.
Right, and that's less...
I won't convert for it. But I wouldn't mind waking up to it on Easter morning.
But it's in a funny way less sweet. You know, I just finally learned in my dotage, literally, I just learned the difference between a raisin and a sultana.
Tell me.
Sultana's a golden raisin.
Oh, well, I knew that, yeah. But
yeah, you did. I'm just telling you that I'm
Well, you
educated.
Know, they're hard to find. I'm not sure why.
It looks as though Trader Joe's sells them. But
my favorite shopping experience.
Exactly.
What were so those? I once went to Trader Joe's just to get mustard because somebody brought me, I know who, somebody brought me Trader Joe Dijon mustard, and I was so impressed with the mustard, I went to my Trader Joe's to buy some, but it was going to take 20 minutes waiting on the checkout line, so I didn't think it was worth it for a jar of mustard. So anyway, I'm going to talk more about another Easter thing that I found in my files that I haven't forgotten about it, but I don't walk around craving. Pastiera rustica. Now, it's an interesting name because pastiera is the super famous, iconic ricotta and grain pie that is made in Naples for Easter. However, everybody loves it so much, it's actually made in Naples all year long now. Pastiera, when you say pastiera to an Italian, they think, ricotta and grain pie. But this is actually a savory pastiera. It's a pasta dish. And I make it with, do not use fresh pasta for this. Let me start by saying that. You want to use egg pasta, but not fresh egg pasta. And I'll tell you why as we go along here. But first I got to find the recipe. I thought I had it right in front of me to share. And I should. Here it is. No, not it. I'll find it. So, pastiera rustica is a baked pasta dish that is great for parties. And I used to make it a lot for parties. Here it is. I want to give this recipe because it's so good. Why isn't it coming up? I hear you. So, this is for, I just found my shopping list to make it double.
Excellent.
So you see, I'm telling you, when I say I made it for parties, I really did make it for parties. I'll get to it in a minute. Anyway, it has all the things that you eat at Easter, eggs, a lot of eggs, and cheese, and also, I have to add, certain cured pork products like pancetta and soppressata don't last forever. So after a 40 days of Lent, you really want to indulge yourself on Easter, and those are always added to they are added to many Easter dishes, pancetta and soppressata. So now, if I could only find the actual recipe, I could tell you how to make this. Just give me a second. Why don't you say something, Jill?
What would you like me to say?
Yeah, fill in.
Well, I would like you to say, you guys were talking about babka. When I was a kid, I used to just get my grandmother upset because there was a famous expression she always used around my house with the kids. You do babkas. Bubkis.
Bubkis is not babka.
I know, but for some reason, as a kid, I used to say, you do babka.
I do babka.
And she always used to say, it's not babka, it's bubkis.
Well,
see, that's what you get, by the way.
Your grandmother, I have to say. And I, speaking of this word bubkis, which my grandmother always translated as a four-letter word, starting with S-H.
Yeah.
I read somewhere, just like within the last week, this word has become very popular on TV, apparently.
Because.
Bupkis.
Because you can't use the other word.
The definition was not S-H blank blank. It was something like nothing, okay?
You don't do
bupkis. Bupkis, I guess, has come to mean nothing.
Yeah, but babka has always that and the
is anything but nothing.
That and the Seinfeld nothing. Episode where he stole the babka from the lady.
So anyway, Arthur, this is what happens when you request stream of consciousness from Marshall.
This is a stupid thing of modern life, and it's something I rail against all the time. But I'm busy looking for this recipe.
Right.
In the
middle
files,
of a radio show.
In my computer file.
Right.
When all I need to do is look at the index of my book, which is right by my desk. And look up the recipe, and that's what I'm doing right now.
Good, because otherwise, is it in Jewish cooking? Because otherwise I've got
here that. It is. No, it's in Naples at Table.
All right, that is at home.
And it's
sorry.
Interesting. I got this recipe. Lent to me once in the mid-90s, early 90s, was a cookbook of recipes that had been contributed to the local Neapolitan newspaper. And these books had been published in the 60s or 70s, and my friend had them, and she would not let me leave Italy with them. And in fact, it was over these books, I had the books photocopied, which is totally illegal, of course, because it's copyright infringement. But as the woman in the hotel said to me when I asked her where to find somebody to copy them, she said, well, nothing is illegal in Naples. So anyway, that's how I got this recipe for the pastiera rustica, and it does call for 1 pound of dried egg pasta. Now, get narrow egg pasta if you can, usually called tagliolini or tagliatini or tagliatelle, some little thing on the back there. If you can't find that, fettuccine is fine. It's a little wider than I like, but the narrower the ribbon pasta, the better. So a pound of that, dried. So 4 tablespoons of butter. I'm going to read the ingredients, and I'm going to give you the quick recipe. And 2 cups of cold milk. Now, this is an interesting technique that I use now even for macaroni salad, which is you boil the pasta until it's al dente, because you're going to put it in the oven, so you don't want it to be fully cooked. And as soon as it comes out, you drain it. You put it into a bowl with, in this case, 1 pound of pasta, 2 cups of cold milk. And I also add butter to this, half a stick of butter. And you toss the hot pasta with the milk and the butter, and you let it stand, and you mix it, tossing it every few minutes, until all the milk, or almost all the milk, has been absorbed. You're going to end up with a couple tablespoons of milk. But basically, you're cooling your pasta in milk. It's absorbing the milk. And besides it adding to the texture, the nice creamy texture, it's going to prevent the pasta from sticking to itself. Then you beat 4 large eggs and beat that in. And now you add your cheeses. First, 2/3 of a cup, not packed, just about 2 ounces. Of Parmigiano Reggiano, and 2/3 of a cup packs, not tamped down, about 2 ounces of pecorino, and then a lot of black pepper. I like a lot here, at least a half a teaspoon. Then a little bit of butter to grease the pan, and you're going to need a big pan for this. You use your lasagna pan, probably is the best thing. I have a big a ceramic pan that I use, but it's fine. So then you're going to add your cheese, which is 4 ounces of provolone. I like really sharp provolone, and I'm using provolone here, although there may be other cheeses used as well. 4 ounces of pancetta. That ends up being about 3/4 of a cup when you dice it and don't leave it in anything bigger than like 1/8-inch dice. You want it fine. And the same with the soppressata, although you can dice that a little, 4 ounces, dice that a little more. Mix that all in. Bake this in a 350-degree oven for at least 50 minutes. Could take an hour. And then you want to let it rest. You do not want to serve this immediately from the oven because it's going to fall apart. You need it to rest at least 10 minutes, maybe even 20 minutes. It will, believe me, it'll still be hot. It won't be burning hot. You don't want it burning hot. In fact, this is very, because what I like about it for parties is that as it cools, it's still delicious. So I'll take this out of the oven. It makes a big presentation as well. I'll take this out of the oven 20 minutes before serving it, but then if people go back for seconds, and it's 40 minutes after serving it, it's still delicious. I don't like it so much cold, but this is one of those dishes that Italians would take on their Easter Monday picnic. It's like a torta rustica, which is basically all of that without the pasta poured into a pastry crust. And the other dish that, and I've actually been wanting to do this for weeks now. I get to this point, I have to have spinach. Spinach is the first, even where you are, the first growing thing is spinach usually, and but you can get nice leaf spinach in the supermarket now. I did already. I don't like that baby, those boxes of baby spinach, not for cooking anyway.
I do.
So if you get good spinach, you make a torta pasqualina, which is a pie filled with spinach and ricotta and hard-cooked eggs and cheese, and a lot of cheese, and there's your eggs, in a double-crust pastry. But many years ago, I came up with, why not have this deconstructed and make it an antipasto pasqualina? And I love just sautéed spinach, could be with garlic and hot pepper, could be just cooked and then dressed with oil and lemon juice, which I think is more appropriate in this case, and then hard-cooked eggs, some salami. Maybe you want to put some prosciutto on there, and you need cheese. You could ricotta salata would be sort of traditional for this time in this kind of a plate, but any nice cheese would do, and you could even just put ricotta. Not ricotta salata, which I like. This is very Sicilian, topped with chopped almonds and a little olive oil. Okay, now that I made myself hungry, do I get to eat breakfast?
You get to have breakfast.
You
now.
Definitely get to have breakfast.
You get to eat
breakfast.
You've got so many different things to choose from. It's just
well, I went through these files. I said, oh my God, I haven't made this in so long. I should do this now. Kulach, my God.
Yum.
All right.
My belly doesn't require it, unfortunately. That's another story.
It's the holidays.
All right, Arthur.
So, see you on Easter Monday. No, I guess we'll still have another week.
We've got another week.
Yeah.
What's Palm Monday called? I know it's Holy Week, but what's the Monday after Palm Sunday called?
Well, that's next week would be Palm Sunday, wouldn't it?
Next week is Palm Sunday, and then the Monday is something. And then I know that, because I always love this word, I know that Thursday is Maundy Thursday. Then you've got Good Friday, which is also the first night of Seder. And another full moon.
Is all boding well astrologically?
I think so.
Okay, good.
All right.
You're
throwing around so many names, I'm confused now. So
it's the free will component.
They speak another language, Marshall.
I know.
It's the free will component.
You
that's
have some
my
simple
concern.
Thing is like, what's going to happen tomorrow?
I know, that's right.
And they tell you about all these stars and moons.
We just want to get there.
Rising and falling.
Here, I'll tell you what's going to happen tomorrow. You'll
what's
live.
What's going to happen tomorrow?
You'll live.
There we go.
I'll live. Well, good thing. My paint job ends today. I can't wait. So you'll live has meaning here because we have been reduced to two rooms, the kitchen and the bedroom, while a lot of work is going on here.
All right.
But it'll be over today.
Okay.
So then I can live.
That's exciting. All right. Enjoy your breakfast.
Take care.
Goodbye. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, right here on Robin Hood Radio.